Welcome to Interviews for Resistance. We are now several months into the Trump administration, and activists have scored some important victories in those months. Yet there's always more to be done, and for many people, the question of where to focus and how to help remains. In this series, we talk with organizers, agitators, and educators, not only about how to resist, but how to build a better world. I am Sarah Jaffe, your host.
I am Amy Zechmeyer. I am a co-chair for the Houston Democratic Socialists of America.
All right. And so a lot of people's attention has sort of shifted to Florida right now, but tell us what sort of things look like in Houston right now, a week or so after the hurricane.
I think we're 2 weeks after it hit us, and for large portions of Houston, things are going back to normal. The highways are reopening. People are going back to work.
Mm-hmm.
But for other portions of Houston, things are not going to be okay for a very long time.
Right.
And a lot of those divides are economic divides.
Mm-hmm.
And it has also really highlighted the racial segregation in our city. Because you go to some neighborhoods and they look fine. Everyone, you know, still has their home and their manicured lawn and their car sitting out front. And then mm-hmm. you go into some of the other neighborhoods that were affected and you see where people's entire lives have been removed from their home, including the drywall. So everything inside a home that made that home a home has mm-hmm. been pulled out and thrown in a large heap mm-hmm. on the side of the road.
Yeah.
And so you can just see it's a very visual representation of what neighborhoods are affected and what neighborhoods are just business as usual.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a good point. We see sort of the inequality really clear in times of disaster.
You know, a lot of the neighborhoods that we've gone to have actually had people tell us, nobody else has come to check on me.
Mm-hmm.
They said that their pastors come to check on them, but no other organizations have been out there besides the Democratic Socialists and their red shirts. And there's something really heartbreaking about that to me.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit more about sort of what are people's needs right now that you've been seeing and hearing about?
The largest need, I would say, is safe housing. Many of the families are still living in their homes with drywall that is soaked in flood water.
Mm-hmm.
The flood water itself is toxic, and beyond that, mold has started to grow extremely rapidly.
Yeah.
And so we walk into these homes and our lungs just burn, and we have to wear respirators just to do the work.
Yeah.
And these families who have contacted FEMA and been given a list of hotels that are all full and not accepting new people,
mm-hmm.
Are forced to stay in their home where it is unlivable and toxic and they have nowhere to go. And then some of the people had already experienced the shelter from Katrina
mm-hmm.
because
yeah.
a lot of people who were displaced by Katrina moved to Houston.
Right.
And so, you know, we have people who've already been, you know, at the Superdome, and when people ask them if they would like to go to the NRG Stadium or the George R. Brown Shelter, you know, they would rather stay in their home where they feel safer, even though it's toxic and unlivable.
Yeah, I know. I was thinking about that a lot, that, you know, Houston is just a place where you have so many people who ended up after Katrina and couldn't go home, and now what does that look like to be displaced twice? It's got to be just horrifying.
It's extremely traumatic. And, you know, it's now it's relived trauma, so it's even worse.
Yeah.
And what's so interesting to me is that we keep hearing about Texas Strong
mm-hmm.
and all the work that is being done and how, you know, Houston Strong, Texas Strong, and all of mm-hmm. that. But the people who are really there for each other are the people who live within these neighborhoods. And whenever someone, you know, when we help someone, I will get follow-up from that because I'm hearing from them about their neighbor, their cousin, their friend. And so the community there is something that has been the most moving to me. And I think that it's something that's really missing everywhere else.
Yeah.
So while, yes, it's Houston strong, a lot of Houstonians have shown up, a lot of Texans have shown up to offer assistance.
Mm-hmm.
The real strength in my mind is the community that already existed for these most vulnerable people.
Yeah.
And I think that we should all learn something from that.
Yeah, it's interesting, of course, because when these, you know, when these storms strike in places where government services have been pared back versus places where government services are strong, you can really see which parts of the state work and don't work.
Absolutely, absolutely. That is something that I spoke about a little bit before this happened, before we had any idea that this would happen. I spoke at the Democratic Socialists of America convention.
Mm-hmm.
About red state organizing. And one thing I wanted people in blue states to understand is that when we talk about, you know, a socialist social safety net,
yeah,
that we're describing something to people in a red state that has never existed for them, or at least hasn't in a very long time. We have massive privatization efforts here to privatize our social services, to privatize human suffering, essentially.
Yeah.
And so when you try to explain to someone that we want more of that, they are thinking of a broken system that doesn't really help anyone and doesn't do what it's supposed to do. And so, you know, when we talk about things like Medicare for All, and now, again, in this case, you know, people are seeing a lot of issues with receiving FEMA assistance.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, even just their food stamps, the system keeps going down. They're trying to get unemployment for their lost wages. That system keeps going down. And so in places like Texas, where our social safety net is extremely underfunded and privatized as much as possible, the help just isn't there.
So when you're out on the ground, and I'm going to ask you more details about the work that you're doing in a second, but who are you seeing sort of out in the neighborhoods doing the work besides DSA? Are you seeing the Red Cross? Are you seeing the cops? My experience after Sandy was that there's a lot of security and not a lot of service in a lot of places.
During the curfew, I would see police out at night, mostly on my way home. I do not live in a wealthy neighborhood, but I drive through one to get home from downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And so the police would be lining the wealthy neighborhood, watching who is coming in and coming out.
Yeah.
Other than that, I haven't seen a large law enforcement presence. Although, you know, our city did what they could to possible and that kind of thing. So I'm not going to take away any credit there.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had, you know, they had to make calls to civilians to bring out their boats because nothing like this was anything that I think any city could plan for. This flood was completely unexpected and catastrophic in a way that Houston has never seen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But as far as who I've seen out helping, it has not been the Red Cross. I have not seen the Red Cross anywhere.
Yeah.
I did not go to the George R. Brown shelter, which is the one of the ones that they were running. But you hear a lot of stories coming out of that shelter now that it's kind of devolving into chaos. And then a different group called Baker Ripley is running the NRG Stadium shelter. And it's supposedly running much more smoothly.
Mm-hmm.
And I know some people who have family members staying there, and they're reporting that it's very nice.
Yeah.
And that people feel safe.
Yeah.
But I have not seen the Red Cross out in the field doing any work in any way. I have seen Black Lives Matter Houston out doing what are called muck and get operations at homes. I know unions have been out doing the work. The AFL-CIO here has been coordinating some efforts, as well as individual unions like the Texas State Employees Union and Unite Here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I've also seen churches out and about, a lot of people delivering food, a lot of people, you know, in teams literally going door to door saying, what can we help you with?
Yeah.
But no, not government agencies and not the Red Cross. I've also seen insurance salesmen out and about.
Oh, God. So tell us about what DSA has been doing then.
So when this started, we knew that we were going to want to offer some sort of community service to Houston, but we had no idea, one, how bad it would get, and two, how much support we would receive nationally.
Yeah.
So we set our original goal at $10,000, and in our wildest dreams, we thought we would raise about $20,000, you know, if things just went extremely well. And at this point, I think we're at about $113,000 raised so far. And so we immediately had to figure out how to put together something really big.
Yeah.
And I've been incredibly proud of our chapter and, you know, our national organization, in that we have worked with disaster relief professionals to come up with a plan and do education within our chapter so that we are doing the right things and we're doing the most efficient things. And then we have made a plan that's a three-part plan.
Mm-hmm.
So our first goal is to make sure that the undocumented community who do not qualify for federal funds,
yeah,
and are in an extremely politically hostile environment with things like Senate Bill 4,
right,
which luckily did have a stay, but, you know, until the last minute, you still had Border Patrol doing checkpoints and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So we pledged to make a sizable donation to an organization working specifically with the undocumented community.
Yeah.
And we've been able to do some individual aid for undocumented families as well.
Yeah.
And then our second plan is to do direct aid through, you know, supplies and even some, you know, just straight financial aid, because we know that food and water is one thing, but there are lots of other needs, and each family knows their own needs, and we trust them to do that, so we have no problem giving financial aid. Our third thing is doing our Muck and Get operation, which is the largest amount of work.
Right.
This is the most work I've ever done in my life, both physically and just as far as time goes. And that is where you go into the home, you help remove all of the flood damaged belongings, which is both a physical labor and an emotional labor, because mm-hmm. you have a traumatized family who is watching and helping remove all of their objects, everything that they worked hard for their entire lives, every sentimental, you know, picture, ticket stub, you know, all the things that they've kept just being, like, put in a huge pile on their lawn. And so there's a lot of emotional labor with that as well. And then after you get all of the stuff out of the house, you figure out how high you need to remove the drywall, and you remove all the drywall that you can, all the insulation you can, and then spray it with a chemical. So it's mm-hmm. a ton of work, and it's hot. And, yeah, you have to wear respirators. And so I've been extremely impressed with the outpouring of support that we've received through volunteers willing to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to talk about the importance of doing mutual aid work like this as DSA, as a left organization, and how that helps you build in the community.
So, you know, we're definitely reaching communities that probably, you know, don't subscribe to Jacobin, you know, or don't, you know, different communities than we normally reach. It's not, you know, the dirtbag left from Twitter. It's not the same people that we reach via social media. And
right.
So to a certain extent, we're running into people who may not ever realize that they know a socialist. It's not part of the conversation. And so to have socialists out there wearing shirts that say, you know, Houston DSA on them, and doing the work, showing that we're here to be in solidarity with them, that we believe that, you know, that working people have to stick together and do work for working people to make sure we're all okay, and really like living socialism in that way has been amazing for us. And I'm hoping that even if, you know, these people don't immediately go and say, oh, now that my house just had all the drywall removed, let me sign up for the Democratic Socialists of America.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that we'll at least, you know, bring that idea of socialism and who we are, and that we're not just the thing that people complain about on Fox News, that we'll make that available to people in a different way.
And so you mentioned, of course, that undocumented folks in the area are not eligible for federal aid, that there's particulars that people are facing. And so, yeah, I wanted to ask about the connections between, of course, the what people are facing in terms of quote-unquote natural disaster and the disaster that is the Trump administration for undocumented people in this country.
It's just very scary. It's already been scary. It's extremely stressful for people. The fear is there that if you get pulled over or if, you know, I show up at your house, like, you're going to get sent away. And I don't know if you've seen, but it's been reported that a DACA recipient actually died doing rescues here in Houston. And so people were willing to, you know, put themselves on the line. But at the same time, we have to be willing to recognize that regardless of citizenship status, that the diversity of Houston is what makes Houston great. And that the most vulnerable people are those who are not in a situation to seek help because of fear of our government. And that's what's happened with the Trump administration. But even beyond that, our current governor, Greg Abbott, and our lieutenant governor, Dan Patrick, they are just really at war on the undocumented. They do a lot of dog whistling and a lot of rhetoric around immigration and borders and walls and all of that. So that's been going on here in Texas for some time. And we have to make sure that people who feel vulnerable, people who are unprotected, and people who are under attack have a barrier between them and the government. And I think that DSA really hopes that we can help support that and give them aid without them having to put them at risk.
When we're looking at this kind of crisis, obviously climate change plays a part in making these things worse, and the fact that we're having these multiple really massive storms on top of each other, the fact that Harvey just sort of sat on Houston for however long it was. So how does this sort of moment, I guess, shape the climate justice work you're doing, the way that your organization thinks and talks about climate change?
So climate change is a really difficult subject in some ways here in Houston because we have a economy that in large part runs on fossil fuel. You know, like I said, our stadium is NRG Stadium. That's an energy company. We have an area of our city called the Energy Corridor, which is where all of the oil and gas companies have their offices.
Right.
And that's why it's called that. So our conversations around climate change are always a little more complicated in that regard. So we have a lot of people who understand climate change is, you know, man-made and a problem and something that needs to be addressed.
Yeah.
But there is a different level of that climate change that's gone on here in Houston that made this such a disaster. And it's that we have paved our entire city. So it doesn't actually have to be this large discussion on, you know, climate change because we burn fossil fuels and we make all these changes to our, you know, environment in that way. We've changed our physical environment that you can see with your eyes and confirm that that is real here in Houston. So it's undeniable.
Yeah.
And it's undeniable that the water just sat on Houston and didn't have anywhere to go because we've paved all the prairie grass in our city. And we literally put paving, like we paved near bayous and we built homes near bayous. where it's natural that water is going to run off and go into the floodplain. And we pave it anyway, knowing exactly what is going to happen.
Yeah.
So this was a long time coming. There had already been discussions prior to this happening that this could happen. And when you combine that with all of the refineries and the chemical plants and that kind of thing that are down here, you can see the haze. You can see the hazy sky from the burn-offs happening at the refineries. You mm-hmm. can, you know, see that water just sat there for days and days because it had nowhere to go. And so we don't have to talk about this abstract science of, you know, climate change and how we've affected, you know, long-term weather trends and that kind of thing. It's visible and it's right there.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course you had this, right, this flood coming through the, as you said, the energy corridor, all of this stuff. You had, weren't there explosions at a plant or something like that also?
Like if you put the area that the storm affected on a map, mm-hmm. it's massive. And I hate to be that Texan that says this, but, you know, Texas is really big. I've never heard that before. So we went last weekend to a city called Beaumont, and it's about an hour and a half from Houston, or, you know, 90 miles.
Mm-hmm.
And we drove through this area. And I think that the chemical plant is in Crosby, which is maybe about halfway there or a third of the way there.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where that's been going on. So that hasn't affected us here specifically in Houston, but it's something that everyone has been talking about because it is nearby. But it's not affecting us here directly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just like you, it's on the news.
Looking forward to the next year or more, I mean, we still have neighborhoods recovering from Sandy, let alone places that are still recovering from Katrina. How is this shaping what you look at as an organization going forward? What are you guys thinking about that maybe you weren't thinking about before?
I think it's just highlighted what our city needs the most. And I think that it's also highlighted what DSA can do really well.
Mm-hmm.
So looking forward, I think that we will, for the unforeseeable future, be doing work in regards to Harvey relief.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's going to cost billions and billions of dollars for the city to recover, and people will be forgotten. There was already a Blue Tarp project going on that was about homes who still had blue tarps covering their roofs mm-hmm. from Hurricane Ike.
Yeah.
Which I believe was in 2008. And so there was a project going on currently right now to help those people get their roofs repaired just now in 2017. And I imagine that we're going to be seeing the damage from this for a very long time. But there are things that we can work to address politically. And then there are ways that we can work to build outreach in the communities so that our networks are better if this were to happen again, and we'll be able to have an even greater reach. But politically, there are things that I have been made more aware of that are things that people always talk about, like housing or affordable housing being in floodplains and that kind of thing. Like we always talk about these things, but now I see actionable items that have been highlighted by this disaster.
Mm-hmm.
And so moving forward, we'll be working with our city council and our mayor to educate them and push them to do the right thing for the people of Houston, not just the developers in Houston who have currently been the only people who've received any attention from them.
Yeah.
And then we'll also be working on making sure that there are ways that we can reach out to people who are in need in Houston, not just in times of crisis, but for the foreseeable future. So as we've been doing this work, it's been a really huge emotional toll on me and the other DSA members that I'm working with, because people feel the need to explain to you why it's okay for them to receive aid from you, because mm-hmm. we're not used to people just being there for you, and we're not used to accepting that kind of help, but people are in such a state that they really do need it, and so they they need it so that they feel okay receiving it. And I think that when I finish all of this and the, you know, trauma has passed and the exhaustion has passed, I'm going to find when I look back on my entire life that this is going to be the most fulfilling thing that I ever do, because I built real relationships with these people that we are serving, and it's been really something beautiful that I didn't realize I was missing in that kind of community relationship that we forget about with social media, that we forget about with, you know, the news cycle and all of that. This has been real people helping real people, and I recognize that many of these people would help me if I were in the same circumstance, and I really, like I said, just believe that this will be the most fulfilling thing that I ever do.
That's great. Great. And how can people keep up with you and with Houston DSA?
We're on Facebook and Twitter at Houston DSA. And we also have a website. It's HoustonDSA.org. And if they would like to donate more funds to us, they can go to HoustonDSA.org/donate.
Interviews for Resistance is a project of Sarah Jaffe with assistance from Laura Fayebois and support from the Nation Institute. You can find more information at necessarytrouble.org. Thanks for listening.